Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Explaining why something happened is not the same as justifying it. Hamas's October attack on Israel has historical context. Israel's horrifically disproportionate response also has historical context, at least 75 years of context. History does not happen in a vacuum. Crosstalking Palestine, I'm joined by my guest, Alon Ben-Mir. He is a retired professor of international relations, formerly at New York University Center for Global Affairs. And in Rome, we cross to Romana Robeo. She is an author and managing editor of the Palestine Chronicle. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Let's go to Rome first. Romana, what I want to make here a program is to talk about messaging and context. I'm not looking to look at who's right or wrong here, but how the public is understanding the conflict that is going on in Gaza. And it seems to me that on the one side, there's a lot of people, really smart people, that know the history of this conflict inside out and backwards. It's one of the most studied conflicts in history. But juxtaposed to it, there's a hell of a lot of emotion, and it's a very toxic mixture. Your thoughts?
It's absolutely true. I have to say that there are two layers in this debate. On one side, we have the intention, the deliberate intention of polarizing this discussion and this narrative in a very silly way. On one side, we have the intention by Israel, by the United States, by Western countries to say that there is a party in this conflict that is pure evil, and a party in this conflict that is pure good. And it's the theme of the clash of civilization that we have been listening to and experiencing throughout, at least the last two decades. So this narrative wanted to be applied exactly to what was happening in Palestine and Israel. But I have to say that maybe like never before, I have seen a level of awareness among the general public that is completely different. Like, people seem to know that the discussion cannot be reduced to such a silly polarization, that, you know, there are some complexities and that we have to go deeper and to analyze the context. There were some breaches in the official narrative that infuriated Israel. For example, when the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said that the October 7 facts did not happen in a vacuum, it was kind of a, you know, very simple and very logical conclusion. But still, Israel was infuriated by that because it was breaking the narrative, the extremely polarized narrative that is functional to the genocide and to the reaction, the completely disproportionate reaction, and to what we are seeing and witnessing in Gaza.
I'm sorry, keep going, dear. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, keep going.
I think that, you know, the multipolarism that we are experiencing at a geopolitical level is also a multipolarism in the information realm. So it is far more difficult now to impose a narrative from above, and the public is far more reactive to different sources of information, social media and alternative media. So it's not so easy to have a polarized discussion and debate.
All the more so is since, because of technology that has advanced immensely over the last few years, we're actually, and this is what kind of shocks my conscience all the time, is that we can watch this live on television. So when an apartment block blows up, you know a lot of people just died. You're watching it in real time. You're watching this catastrophe unfold. For myself, I feel powerless. Alon, one of the things that I find really interesting, kind of dovetailing what we heard from Romana, is that, you know, we had U.S. State Department officials that again create this false dichotomy, this false binary of pure evil. But when they ask, you know, are you sure that Israel isn't committing war crimes? Well, they skip it. You know, they just say, well, you know, we know that they're doing their best. You know, as someone has pointed out to me, you know, they're doing surgical strikes. But if they're doing surgical strikes, who's the doctor? Dr. Death? Okay, but then, you know, there's no, you know, but Hamas, well, that's just pure evil. They commit war crimes all of the time. Again, you know, publics watch this and they say, that's just a double standard. Alon in New York.
Well, we have to look at the picture from a number of angles, actually. There's no question if you just see what you see and what we're hearing, that is the Israeli retaliation. It's disproportionate. When they bomb a certain building, they should know that civilian will get killed. On the other hand, their excuse or their explanation is that Hamas is embedded within the civilian community, and there is not much we can do. We're doing everything we can to prevent civilian casualties, but that is the nature of this terrible war. But I think going back to what was earlier mentioned is that, you know, most people simply do not know really the background of what's actually happened. Even you can go back to 1948.
Yeah, but Alon, if I could interrupt, but do you think that's intentional that they don't know the history? Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
I think many of them, as was mentioned earlier, you know, they fall into the public narratives, and the Israelis have their own narrative, the Palestinians have their own narrative, where we have to understand where this came from. And that is really the parting point here. You have to go back all the way, in fact, to 1948. What you have created is you have two people have claim to the same land. That's a fact and remains to this very day. True. It's the same demand. Both have the same claim to the same land. On the other hand, there is built into that, there's a psychological dimension to the conflict, which people simply do not look at. That is, you cannot simply sit today and decide, okay, let's agree on a peace accord with these kind of terms. You have to address the historical perspective of the conflict itself. And this is where there's many stumbling points. People simply do not see there is a psychological impediment that need to be addressed. Israelis, for example, do not accept the fact they have precipitated what the catastrophe, what the Palestinians call the Nakba. The Israelis, on the other side, this is their perpetual enemy. We cannot trust them. And therefore, we're going to have to sustain the policy we have now, that is the occupation in the West Bank, the seizure, the blockade over Gaza. That's the only way we can keep the Palestinians at bay. That is the problem here. The question is, how do you unravel this?
Yep.
And this is, you know, my argument has always been, you know, Israel is the more powerful party here. Israel ought to take more initiative. Israel cannot sustain the occupation indefinitely. And what happened on October 7th, it is not in vacuum. This has exactly happened because going back to history of Israeli, quote-unquote, oppression in the West Bank, this is nothing new. On October 4th, I was very clear, and I'm not a prophet, but I said it. If the Israeli government does not change its policy in the West Bank in particular, we are going to see another explosion that will make the second intifada look like a rehearsal. This is exactly what happened. And my conclusion was based on what I've been watching and seeing what's taking place in the West Bank. And then, like you said, it's not even a question of right or wrong, but this is the fact. This is what the Palestinians are experiencing day in and day out. The same thing, you've got 17 years of a blockade. Whether you can justify it or not, as far as the Palestinians themselves are concerned, they feel they are in prison. And so Israel attempted to maintain the status quo, but they should have known this is not sustainable. And that is the result, is what we are seeing today unfolding, which is tragic.
And Romano, one of the interesting things, kind of reflecting on what you said earlier, is that I've been it gives me joy and happiness that more and more people have come to the conclusion that the Palestinians actually do have a narrative, they do have a history, they do have a legacy. And that is something I have to say I was really surprised by, particularly by the younger generation in the Western world, in Europe and in the United States. And so after this onslaught of a very forceful narrative, I remember it being growing up. I remember this narrative very clearly. And it somehow, with that, the foundations of that narrative have been shaken to its core. Go ahead.
Yes, and what is really encouraging is that there is not only a narrative linked to humanitarian reasons. Of course, the strength of what we see, the horror of what we are witnessing these days is so strong that, you know, it moves emotions. This is clear. But in the same time, people seem to be aware that this is not just a humanitarian issue. Because yes, it's true, there are two people who have the same claim, the claim on the same land. This is true. But we have a colonizer and a colonized. And what I am, you know, seeing these days is that the public seems aware of this dynamic precisely, that there is an ideology, the Zionist ideology, which inspired Israel, which is a settler colonial ideology. So the ultimate goal is the removal, the annihilation of the native population, of the Palestinian population. And people seem very aware of this. And I have to say that this awareness has to be credited to many Palestinian intellectuals that, you know, never gave up throughout the years and tried to push their point of view, their narrative. And now it is curious, you know, that Israel has long denied the Nakba to the point that from a legal point of view in Israel, it is not allowed to mention that there was a Nakba. This is true, there was this denial. But in the meantime, we see Israeli officials, Israeli ministers claiming the Nakba and saying, we want to do a second Nakba. We want the Gaza Nakba to roll out. So, you know, the contradictions of the colonial Zionist experiencing, I think they are emerging in a very strong way, and it's so difficult for them to deny them from an intellectual and practical point of view.
Hey, Ramona, before we go to the break, I'd like Ilan to respond to what you just said. Go ahead, in New York.
Yeah, yes, I think the usage of the words, that the purpose of the Zionist movement was to annihilate the indigenous population, it's going a bit too far, because if you study the Zionist ideology, you'll find it was very clear. Ben-Gurion, Herzl himself, realized the fact that we are Palestinian, that the Jews would have to coexist with the Palestinians. This was the belief. They may have been naive at the time, thinking that coexistence was entirely possible. But what happened is that over the years, the Israelis developed the insatiable lust for more and more territory, going back to the biblical, prophecy that this land belonged to the Jews. And this is, okay, of course,
I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Palestine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Palestine. Okay, I want to go back to Ilan in New York. Unfortunately, we had to interrupt you to go to a break, but I'd like you to continue, please.
So what I'm saying then, you know, over the years, the Israelis in particular, the extremists, right of center, developed this insatiable lust going back to trying to recover the entire land from the Mediterranean to the Jordan River. This current Israeli government is basically has been very open about that, that intend to annex the entire West Bank if they only could. So what we have today, in my view, what happened in October 7, as a matter of fact, this is a major breakdown in the relationship between the two sides, but it also offers a breakthrough. That is, we can no longer go back to the status quo ante at this point. That is, the Israelis have awakened to a bitter fact that the Palestinian problem is there.
Yeah, the problem, I agree with you, the status quo is untenable, but there are two different directions. One direction is to go back to what used to be called the two-state solution, which seems almost impossible, or annihilation of the Palestinian people. That's the way the trajectories are played out here. Let me go back to Ramana in Rome. I mean, I personally think, as an American, this entire Zionist project wouldn't have gotten to the point where it is now without American help. I mean, Joe Biden could have said a ceasefire, and you know what? Most likely it would have happened, but he can't utter those words, okay? And that makes him complicit. Go ahead in Rome.
Absolutely. There has been a complicity and even an encouragement to some extent. When Antony Blinken went in the first visit after October 7, a few hours, he was actually openly encouraging genocide. And even Western media, their narrative, their approach, they were not only complicit, they were basically encouraging the genocide of a population. We tolerated words that are openly calling for genocide. Now, we can object that there was this intention. I insist on the fact that I do not recognize that intention since the very start of the Zionist project, because, you know, the terra nullius was there, and the myth of the land with no people for a people with no land accompanied the Zionist project since the very start. For throughout the decades, we have seen this complicity and we have seen the exceptionalism. So Israel not only could openly call for genocide with several nuances. Can we say that? With several nuances. Sometimes it was more tolerated, you know, Palestinians were tolerated more or less. But at the end, the ultimate goal was there, and Israel was never held accountable, despite the fact that Israel is the main violator of UN resolutions and of all the norms of international law that the West itself set up. So, everybody recognized that Israel was violating international law, but Israel has never been held accountable. And we have seen that the United States continue to protect Israel with their veto power, for example, at the United Nations. They have blocked any attempts of resolutions in the first phases of this latest genocidal war on Gaza. And at the end, they agreed on these humanitarian truces that were clearly, you know, such a way to find a middle ground in a situation that has no middle ground, because here we are witnessing the genocide of 2.3 million people in a very small piece of land. So there is really no middle ground. We have to take a stance, and this stance
well,
has
I,
to
I
be
Well, I suppose
powered.
That's why... Look, go ahead, jump in. Go ahead. That's the purpose of the program.
I think the consistent use of the word genocide and annihilation is simply going too far. Let me just remind you a couple of things. Whereas I absolutely believe that the Palestinians have the right to establish a state of their own, I do believe still to this day that the two-state solution is the only solution, because they both exist and neither side can get rid of the other. Simply, Israel cannot annihilate the Palestinians, nor can the Palestinians annihilate the Israelis. But I just also want to remind the audience, Israel is using, of course, the narrative, the extremist narrative coming from some Palestinian extremists like Hamas, like Islamic Jihad, to justify its position in terms of the occupation, in terms of the blockade. But we also, the Palestinians have also lost many, many opportunities. These are facts of life. You can go back to 1947, they refused to accept the partition plan. You can go to 1967, when Golda Meir invited them, come to the table, that is, and they refused after the resolution 242 was passed in the United Nations. In 1973, Anwar Sadat, when they were negotiating with Israel, invited the Palestinians to join the process and make peace with Israel. It did not happen. In 2000, again, at Camp David, major effort, Ehud Barak, the prime minister then,
but a critic would say, even with or without those, the plight of Palestinians on the West Bank has only gotten worse. The plight of the Palestinians in Gaza has only gotten worse. I see your point, and I know this narrative here. But Romano, what is the results for the people?
Let me just say one point, because what I'm saying is, the Palestinians did lose opportunities to reach an agreement, but that does not. The fact that they lost opportunity, that does not that you can usurp their right of establishing a state
but,
of their
own. But you
so
could make
we
the
have arg- to separate between
but,
the two.
But you could make, let me go to Ramallah, you could make the argument, and I know this is kind of fanciful here, but the Israelis could have forced a two-state solution on the Palestinians, forced them to have their own state. They could have done that as well, and I think there would be a lot more peace, okay? But, you know, this missed opportunity narrative, I've come across it a lot, but I look at results. Ramallah, go ahead and roam.
Well,
I honestly think this is a totally Zionist approach to the issue. The fact that there are good Palestinians who were able to talk and discuss, and bad Palestinians that were missing opportunities. This is, you know, a mantra. This is a trope, that a cliche that we have heard throughout the years. Fortunately, I repeat, the public is in beginning to reject this narrative that is completely, you know, biased towards one side. Because while we were having fake negotiations and fake peace processes, and, you know, it was very convenient for us in the West to speak about two-state solution, the truth is that on the ground, the military occupation was more and more suffocating. Settlement expansion was unbearable, basically. Talks about annexation, about openly genocide, the attack on holy sites, the harassment of Palestinian women, of Palestinian children, double standards, a regime of apartheid, and I am not saying this, well-known organizations, human rights organizations have called it an apartheid regime. So speaking about these missed opportunities is honestly, I find it really offensive too, for a people that is a colonized people, an oppressed people, an occupied people, and that has, the Palestinians have indeed the right to defend themselves according to international law. And one last thing, I'm not speaking about genocide lightly here. I'm speaking about genocide because I think that international law gives me the chance to speak about it, because I think there are several analysts that speak about genocide in this case, and the concrete risk of genocide has been, denounced
and
exposed.
Well, Ramallah, you're absolutely right. I mean, up until like 15 seconds ago, using that term, you should have some gravitas, because the U.S. would say the Uyghurs are suffering genocide. They're not. The Ukrainians are suffered genocide. No, they're not. And then when it's being asked of the U.S. administration, they get really nervous and they change the topic. Okay, Alon, we're rapidly running out of time. I want to ask you a question. You know, Israel is not winning the information war here. The 50 beheaded baby story was a flop. The tunnels under Al-Shifa, that looks like a flop too here. I mean, is this sloppiness or arrogance? Go ahead.
I don't think it's either sloppiness or arrogance. Israelis still continue to believe, absolutely, there is a massive network of tunnels under the ground, and they are still looking for that. But let me just be very, very clear about one thing. I am absolutely being disturbed for years, extremely concerned about what the Israelis have been doing in the West Bank. To me, has this never been acceptable? Never. And I have written extensively on that subject. But again, when we speak about genocide and annihilation, when you take that narrative that far, you're going to create another counter-narrative that is make the situation even worse, when in fact, genocide really did not happen. I agree that the Israeli retaliation in Gaza is disproportionate. But we have now to take it from here. What do we do from here? Because if we continue this acrimonious narrative between the two sides, we are not going to go anywhere. There'll be another 75 years of occupation. That should not happen. That's what I'm saying is, when you have this kind of breakdown, we have to consider the historical perspective, but also that we look at the reality today and begin to think in terms of a solution. because accusation, keeping accusation one or both between the two sides is not going to find solution.
Let me set it up here and then I'll throw it to you. It's just, the Genocide Convention talks a lot about intentionality. Well, we have a government in Israel that they're saying it to you in black and white, wipe them out, create, push them out. I mean, we can go on and on about what government officials are saying. And I think that's why the discussion of genocide is being brought up, because intentionality is core. Go ahead and Rome, we're almost out of time.
Just one word about that. You know, the current Israeli government, my view, is the worst government ever created.
I agree with you. I want to give the last 30 seconds to our guest in Rome. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't find it fair to downplay, the trauma of Palestinians since the Nakba and throughout generations, simply saying, oh, this is accusations, we should leave it alone. No, I don't think this is what we should do. Palestinians have all the right to ask for justice, to demand for justice before any solutions, because their trauma is there. And the fact that we deny it, because we can deny it, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. We have seen that in other experiences, we are not allowed, and rightly so, to deny the trauma. We shouldn't do it for Palestinians. Palestinians need to get justice before we start talking about solutions, because otherwise, I do not think that any peace process or any path towards peace can be successful.
All right, that's all the time we have. I'm sorry, we've run out of time. Fascinating discussion and quite informative, I must say. I want to thank my guests in New York and in Rome. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.